Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt, the Bud Knight.
And I am Sir Jimmy of House Nuts. Matt, we just finished up episode 7 of House of the Dragon. How are you feeling, my friend?
Man, there was an enormous change. All the people that said there was a big change, there definitely was. And we will have to get to that with Laenor, because that's, you know, I mean, I guess in theory, he could still be alive in the books.
I think his body is collected. We don't know in what manner his body is collected by the sea snake, but he offers a ridiculous prize to anyone to bring Carl back, and he never does. It never happens.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, this, you could look at this as more information, but to me, it's a change. I would say this is a change. And the shaved head looked good on Laenor. He's out at sea where he wants to be with his boy, Carl. I mean,
you know, the really interesting thing about that, actually, and we can come back to that towards the end of the episode, is that actually has more ramifications in A Song of Ice and Fire than it does in, like, House of the Dragons going forward. Because if that's the case in A Song of Ice and Fire, then that's a huge, I mean, we're talking massive thing that, like, that could change the way we view A Song of Ice and Fire. Because that could have, that could give you more legitimate ties with the Blackfyres if they were to marry into that house and they know what's going on. You know, House Valyrian isn't that really, they're not really that big in Game of Thrones. And then they're not even in the show at all, I don't believe. I don't even think they're mentioned in the show, House Valyrian. We certainly don't see any prominent figures from it. But then in the books, the you know, the five books, I mean, if there are more sort of Valyrians over there, that's game changer. There's more Valyrian blood over there. Yeah.
I mean, this was just a pleasure to watch. The thing I really enjoyed about this ending is the fact that Daemon getting that big inheritance from his dead wife comes to play here, because he has wealth to throw around for Laenor, and his time in Pentos pays off because he's saying, hey, I know a place. They'll take care of you. And he ships him over there. So, like, it's just the fact that there was actually some payoff for those moments in this episode, and it kind of adds up and makes sense. I really, really like this episode a lot.
Yeah, this was definitely another one of those visually dark episodes, right? Oh, yeah. That we saw, definitely, especially towards, like, the end of Game of Thrones. But, man, let me just say, once again, Rahman Djawadi, he never misses ever. It is insane how good the score of this episode was. It just stood out immediately. It set the tone. A very unique episode. Mm-hmm. The opening was a funeral, and it was filmed in such a way that it's what a funeral feels like, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's awkward. People are standing around, you know, there's tension. Yeah. It's weird. If you've ever gone to a funeral, it is just, God, especially for somebody, you know, who you don't necessarily really know. Obviously, then it's just, like, heartbreaking and sad. But, you know, sometimes you go to a funeral where you just kind of know you kind of know somebody, and it's just, God, it's just like it's just a weird thing. You kind of just bounce around to people and talk, but that's kind of what it felt like. I mean, so it definitely captured the vibe, like, of a funeral.
Yeah, and it had a cooler tone, actually, with the colors on this episode as well. And when the funeral was happening, they showed the dragons at first circling the funeral, and then the whole time you could hear them rumbling, and it was like this buildup during the funeral that, like, you know, the dragons are circling, and then towards the end you hear them roar, and it's like things are about to pop off. And then when that escalates into what we end up seeing, obviously Daemon and Rhaenyra in the tent, and then it going in to Aemon One-Eye's story of conquering Vhagar. Vhagar looked so good.
That was the best part. That was the best part of the whole
episode. I literally just was like, wow. Like, mouth open almost. It's a huge deal. I mean, it's a huge deal. And the spectacle of it, it was gorgeous. I thought it was epic. So epic.
And then the scene of him claiming Vhagar too, tied in, you know, it really was, like, I guess the meat and potatoes of the episode, and the ramifications of it was huge. Everybody sort of realizing what just happened with I don't think Allison really sort of put it in her mind until she had that conversation with Otto Hightower.
She's thinking she blew it, and Otto goes, "Oh, no. Now I know that you're legitimately a player here." Right? Yeah. It's like she's earned her keep back with him since being sent off.
And who did they kill at the end? I think it was just that other guy in the room.
It was the guy that Damon ran up and twisted his neck. I believe it was.
He snapped some guy's neck.
He snapped that guy's neck. And they put him in the fire. And
do you think Damon knows that he's alive? He has to.
Yeah. And that's why Damon said, he said, "I need a death that has a witness."
Oh, you're right.
And he said that. So this was all very well planned out. And it actually it's good for Rhaenyra, because if Rhaenyra had just done this after saying you're a good and honorable man, it'd be pretty hard to be Team Black at all at that point, even though Alicent obviously came into her own as, in my opinion, an antagonist in this episode. It would be very hard after seeing Rhaenyra and Laenor's scene, which I thought was really good. I really, really liked those two on screen together. This actor for Laenor did a wonderful job.
Is he going to come back? I mean, that's what's the,
maybe they could mess with this now. I don't think they will. I think that's probably the last time we see him, just because there's so much other stuff, but if they decide to change and expand things, yeah, we could possibly see him again.
And I thought, comment here too by Noel. I thought this too. I said it during the live stream. Yeah, the parallels, right, to Robert Baratheon with Joffrey and Arya and Sansa.
Yes.
And the Butcher's Boy. It was very, very, very similar.
Dude, what about whenever Allison goes, "Kristen Cole, you are sworn to me." And then everyone kind of looks at him like, "Wait, what do you mean?" Like, they don't know the deal. And he goes, "To protect you." And he knows. He's like, "I can't.
Right.
There's no way. We're both dead." And man, I thought that was a really cool scene. It gives a little bit more of a balance to Crispy Cole. It made me feel differently about him just for a split second, barely a moment, because I still think he's a jerk. I thought that whole scene was like peak A Song of Ice and Fire, not just even Game of Thrones, but like peak A Song of Ice and Fire. That just tension with a knife. This is probably my favorite episode. I thought it felt heavy and it felt like a real winner. Out of all the first seven episodes, this is the one that delivered. I think we slowed down a good bit too, which was nice. Yes. And, you know, Miguel at the end, he kind of does this when he directs episodes for some reason. He likes that big sharp avalanche towards the end. But with this one, I didn't feel like the timing or the pacing of the end, like last episode, was rushed. I thought it was fine. I think Laenor being on the boat at the end saves it, to be honest with you. If he had just been dead, I think it would have been terrible. Not terrible as in like bad quality, but like it would have just been too much death week to week. I loved it. I loved the aesthetic of the episode, it being such a cool tone. And you're right, the music matched so well. And even Aemon's, like, I got a little bit of that fantasy like wonder whenever I saw Aemon riding the dragon. And then when he lays down the line from the books where it's like, "We lost an eye, but we gained a dragon." And then Otto putting that over as in like, "We just got the biggest dragon in the potential war to come. Like, you have no idea what we've just secured."
And yeah, you like, didn't just get any dragon.
You got
Vhagar, which is essentially the second most powerful dragon ever.
She looks so cool. So cool.
And they did such a good job of just showing you the sheer scale
size
of it. And I said this during the episode too, real quick. And I know it's totally different with Vhagar because Vhagar is absolutely enormous. But I feel like we got to give Daenerys and Jon Snow a little credit in that
they're raw dogging those dragons.
They're raw dogging. They don't need a saddle. I mean, you know, hey, they just hop on.
Hey.
Even the Night King, you know, he doesn't need a saddle.
Hey, you go with the Dothraki for a little summer. You know, you come back a changed woman. That's all I'm going to say. All right. You go to one Dothraki wedding, you never see a saddle again.
Yeah. So, yeah, it is definitely, you know, got to give some credit where some credit is due. What do you think about the scene with Otto and Allison where I think she's beginning? She's kind of realizing, hey, this is it's time to start playing the game. And this was the first time we've ever referred to them as the Greens.
The Greens. Yes, I love that. You know. Allison's an interesting case in this episode because her reaction, I think, is a motherly reaction. Like, I know my mom used to defend me when I was wrong all the time. So I get it. Also, Viserys calling her Emma at the beginning of the episode was brutal.
Big deal.
But then, like, you know, she goes to Otto. She's just like, I screwed up. And then Otto's like, no, we can play now. We got the nuke. We got the biggest nuke in Vhagar. And for him to kind of be like, now just take care and listen to me. Like, it feels like Otto's in the driver's seat now as he's been like playing from a distance. And it was a really cool piece in that family scene where it shows Otto looking on and Daemon also looking on. And it's like been the outsiders who have been cast out of King's Landing and have come back now. And it's just a really good comparison of kind of like the X factors for each side. So I thought that whole scene is up there with any of the best scenes that I've seen on Westeros TV. Yeah, it's good. Really good.
Somebody asked a question. What happens to Sea Smoke? And
we'll see.
You will see. Yeah. I was trying to remember exactly. I was just like, which dragon is it? Because in the war to come, and it's going to be one of the funniest things to see. And it's, you know, won't be until like season two, but this isn't super spoiler. There comes a moment in the Dance of the Dragons where they're trying to get more dragon riders. And so they're just on Dragonstone being like, okay, well, clearly there has to be a bunch of Valyrian blood on this island because Targaryens, you know, we've slept around and everything. So they literally just start pulling people to try to see who can actually ride some of a, I cannot wait for that. It's gonna
like
be,
just get on, like, just see what happens.
Just see what happens, and then they're gonna die and be like, okay, well, next, you know, like it's gonna be so.
It's like bull riding when you're a couple shots.
I was trying to remember. I was like, is Sea Smoke one of those dragons? No, it's not. It's not.
Yeah. Also, Sea Smoke's a great name for a dragon. I laughed. Speaking of laughing, I laughed out loud whenever Laenor walks in and goes, "Is everyone all right?"
Oh my god.
And his kids have like tissues stuffed up their nose. There's Valyrians.
He's so daft. I mean, there's just like no way. When Aemon says to Aegon, talking about Helaena, she'll be your queen one day.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, I didn't catch, because I didn't have closed captioning on, I need to go back and listen to the words she was saying when she was whispering to old Spider Bro before mm-hmm. she like put the shell on top. I need to actually go and
listen to exactly back. What she was saying. Yeah. Yeah. I always have to do a second watch because I'm doing the watch party. But then typically Mondays or Tuesdays, depending, you know, what football game's on is when I do my rewatch.
Yeah, my first watch is always with my wife, and you know, I'm usually answering questions while taking notes for this. So like sometimes
right. stuff.
And I was like, man, when Helaena was talking, I'm like trying to stress to hear, but I don't want to like fumble with the closed captioning. So we're gonna have to go back and definitely pay attention to her dialogue with the spider in a shell, which is also interesting imagery.
Yeah. So let's talk about Allison's outburst a little bit, because that's kind of a game changer from the books to have that in front of everyone. And she cuts Rhaenyra with the Valyrian steel dagger, and Rhaenyra sort of looks at the fire and then looks at the blade,
and the glyphs are lighting up, and it's like,
right. Oof. And then later she's talking about, you know, we're born of fire and all of that. I mean, that is, you know, when she says, now everyone sees you for what you are. That was, to me, is like the power that was, we saw that in like all the trailers, mm-hmm. but to actually see it was.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where like I don't watch the week aheads and stuff because I like just got getting surprised, but even knowing that moment was coming, it still like caught me off guard because I was so in the scene. Like I wasn't waiting for something. I was just living in the moment whenever that was all going on. Yeah. I thought it was absolute peak Westeros TV.
And what do you, Daemon in this episode as well, very much just sort of hanging back, viewing everything. He chuckles during his cousin wife's you know the funeral, and then, you know, like immediately following that, he's, you know, that's Game of Thrones for you folks, right? you're at your wife cousin's funeral and you hook up with your niece. That's,
that's you're either in West Virginia or you're in Westeros. We have
exactly.
I could say that, guys. I'm from West Virginia. I can say that. I used to live there. Yeah, Damon is such an X factor. And, you know, a lot of people were talking about how they cut the scene of him embracing his daughters last week and how they wish he would have left it in. And I think the probably one of the reasons why is because they looked at all the footage that they had and they were like, this probably doesn't line up to his actions later in the season. That's my opinion. And maybe he's going to have a more sympathetic moment later that they want to have a lot of weight in. And seeing this episode, I think it would have been a little weird because he doesn't even really interact with his daughters here, right? So I don't know what's going to happen with that relationship with his daughters. I'm very curious to see. But I think as an audience, we want to like Damon, but we have to accept the fact that this is a man that murdered his wife. Like,
yeah,
he bashed her skull with a rock. So like how,
yes,
how likable can he actually be? I don't know. In Westeros, maybe very. I'm not sure.
And Rhaenyra does ask him about it and he, you know, says we were happy enough, which I think is about as good as you can get for Damon, except for now that they're secretly married. I mean, I didn't think we were going to get to that for maybe another episode or two.
Yeah. And I think that there is some sort of implied time gap there. At least I took it that way, that it could have been maybe a week or so, because I'm sure Laenor didn't just shave his head and then get on a boat. I'm sure it was a process, but I'm not totally sure. Books of Bangus Khan says, I couldn't believe how much things were escalating during the kids fighting. That was so tense since I had no clue what was going to happen. Yes. As people who are going into this blind, no pun intended for Aemon, that scene had to be so tense because I know what was happening and I still felt it. Also, the kids did a great job in that scene. Sometimes, you know, this isn't a Galadriel dodging swords. You know what I'm saying, Matt? Like it's not a Galadriel action scene. It actually looked good even with the kids. I was very impressed.
It did. Yeah. So I was just I was pulling up the wiki, which is, you know, this is Fire and Blood as well as World of Ice and Fire. In 120 AC, at the age of 39, Damon married again, this time to his niece, Rhaenyra, at the age of 23. The marriage was performed suddenly without the knowledge of King Viserys, the first Targaryen, and was scandalous since neither Lena nor Laenor, you know, had been dead for 6 months. So,
yeah. And we know. Damon seems to be on the outs still with Viserys. And I'll be honest, that scene actually got my heartstrings a little bit at the beginning of the episode when Viserys is trying to make peace and Damon has none of it and walks away. I was like, God, there's something about those two on screen that when they're together, I want them to get along.
Yeah. How many? So I think just looking at some of the events that are about to come, I think we're probably going to 120. So right now we're at about 120 AC.
Mm-hmm.
And so obviously there is a little bit of an age up in the next episode. So I think next we're going to be about 126 AC seems to be somewhere, some more of the events. So I think that seems about right. And then the kids will have aged up just a little bit.
I have a pretty good feeling of where we're going to end, but I won't spoil it for the non-book readers. All I can say is the last three episodes are going to be gasoline. The acting this episode really got me. Like, it got me super invested. Like, I'll be honest, I had kind of forgotten about the younger cast now. Like, it only took two episodes, and I appreciate them and all the work they did. But, like, we're good. We're good. And slowing down a little bit is going to help.
I guess which younger cast are we talking
Millie,
about?
Millie and everyone. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I don't know. It's different because we were with them for so long. And then we had this young core for two episodes. Yeah. But then, you know, we also had like a younger Laenor. And so, but yeah, we've had it, the cast is huge. The cast for the show is enormous.
The fact that they've actually been able to cast so consistently and everyone doing a really nice job is impressive. Like, you know, you're bound to miss on one of them. I wasn't sure how I felt about Aemon's acting until he delivered his big line. And I thought that was excellent. I was very impressed. Like, there was a point where he was on Vhagar and he was like, whoa. And I was like, okay, like, dial it back there, Disney. Like, come on, relax. But, you know, he ended up, you know, him pulling himself on the saddle, claiming the dragon. It did work. And so he did a good job. Kid actors can be hit or miss. You know what I mean? But these kids kicked the shit out of each other and it was awesome.
I thought they all did great for, especially, it's harder with Rhaenyra's sons. It's a little bit harder because they're just not sort of to the Dance of Dragons as iconic as
they're strong.
Right. Yeah, they are strong. Yes. And wow, you know, we can talk about that. I'll talk about that in a second too. The fact that they just flat out confirm that, because that's even in the books, never, it's always a suspicion alluded to. It's never like officially stated that they're that, but Rhaenyra, I mean, flat out says that that's the case in these episodes today, which is huge.
Yes.
We'll get to that real quick, but I definitely think the Alicent's kids, Aemond, Helaena, and Aemond, I thought they were great for the two episodes that we got them. Aegon, I already hate, so he's
dude, he delivered that line.
He's just gonna be perfect for his role.
He was great.
Aemond was good. I thought he was good last week and good this week. And Helaena, God, is just already gearing you up for what her character will be going forward. That's all I really want to say about that. They're actually diving much deeper into the whole her being a seer, which
she's a dreamer.
Being a dreamer, which actually makes her character
so much better.
Without spoiling, but it makes it better. It makes it better.
Yes. Yeah. And you know,
it's going to be great television.
Yes.
Good and bad. That's all. Yeah.
And another thing with that is, like, will she have any dreams that relate now to the dagger, which was brought up again in this episode in a very subcontext way with the glyphs and Rhaenyra seeing that. And, you know, I wonder what they're going to do to play with that. I think that's going to be really, really interesting. You mentioned how good the kids have been, and I thought Aegon had one of the best lines in the entire episode. And it was the way that Miguel set it up and the way he shot it is whenever Viserys goes, "Where did you hear this, Aegon?" And he just looks around. And he goes, "Everybody knows, Dad. Like, everybody knows." And it's just like this moment where the camera cuts and it's Rhaenyra and the boys, and then Corlys is standing behind, and it's like the direct contrast between Corlys and the boys. And you're just like, everyone knows Viserys, like everybody knows it. And he delivered that line though. They kid playing Aegon delivered it so well.
Yeah. Oh no, that line was great. That whole scene, in honesty, was great, because Aemond just sort of looks at Alicent, and then Viserys kind of realizes maybe Alicent isn't as trustworthy or as good as I thought. Then he goes to Aegon. Aegon says that, just as you said. And the tension of and the importance of that scene is huge, because everything that sort of comes out of it is just massive.
Yeah.
The scene too, where Laenor is talking to Rhaenys, and he's talking about, no, it's names that matter. He's like, I don't even care if they're my actual blood or not.
Yeah, and their chemistry on screen, from getting along to joking to now this and fighting, has been outstanding. Rhaenys at the end really sold Laenor's death. You know, unfortunately for her, she'll never know. But yeah, Rhaenys really brought it. That actress is doing a fantastic job. What about Larys just casually threatening to kill children for Alicent?
Oh, I know.
Yeah. It's like, here comes old Dragalong, just
which is causing me to believe that there are going to be moments later that where, you know, it's a civil war, all hell breaks loose. Everybody has like hundreds of kids. So there's going to be, just so you know, so going forward, so much like Game of Thrones, there's going to be a lot of deaths coming forward to characters we haven't even met yet. So, you know, trying to keep it as spoiler free as possible, but there's always like suspicion and mysterious events, surrounding a lot of these events, because the histories are told to us through two sort of opposing ambiguous points of views, and so we don't necessarily know, but now it seems like they're going to be I think Alicent's going to be pulling the trigger on some of those.
And I do think that there's a lot of things that we need to keep track of here in season one as an audience, because they are going to be calling back to this season for things that happened in season 2, 3, maybe even 4. So we have to keep an eye on these things, like Larys and what he's saying. What is Helaena whispering? And you can actually see that evidence even here. You know, a lot of people said, oh, the bronze bitch and Daemon killing her, like, you know, that was, why did they even include it? It was so fast. But now we're like, oh, he gets that big inheritance, which he then uses to pay off Carl, and also same with Laenor. So like, we're actually getting mileage out of a lot of the stuff that people felt like was kind of glanced over. It's actually still getting cashed out for a good payout. So I'm really excited to see where these little details end up, knowing what's coming and some of the stuff that's shrouded in mystery. We're going to get we're gonna get the keys to the castle when it comes to the answers. It's gonna be wild.
Do we think the pace is going too fast still? Yeah. I know we ask that every week, but sometimes it's like, man, the jumps, because now we're about to jump again.
Yeah, but it's such a smaller jump, and like I'm actually totally okay with this one. I think this episode was probably, again, I think this is probably the best one. But overall, I think that this pacing of this episode matches the rest that I didn't feel were rushed last week. It just was a little too much at the end of the episode for me. So no, I'm good. I'm good with the pacing. We have this little time jump where we're going to age the kids up, but the kids are going to take on such a more substantial role. And now we have the groundwork of their beefs, right? And it's sad because we saw their parents' toxicity go into their relationships as kids. They got along before, you know, it's sad. So now that we have all of this history and backstory, the adult actors are going to be able to really deliver for the kids. And I think it's going to be really good.
Yeah, you know, we're also beginning to see, and it's been there over the course of the season so far, that I know we sort of view this whole thing as blacks, greens, two sides.
Yeah.
There really are more factions out there and more people that have their own sort of agenda. And while that sometimes aligns with the blacks, it could sometimes align with the greens. Game of Thrones is a little bit easier, I think, to follow because there's actually tons of factions and everyone is just in it for themselves. Mm-hmm. Whereas here, it's just like, okay, we just have blacks, greens, whose side are you on? Corlys and Rhaenys, you know, at first, okay, well, they're with Daemon, who sort of felt like he was his own piece of the puzzle. It felt like Rhaenyra, Alicent. Okay, and now, well, now Daemon is with Rhaenyra, so that sign is now solidified. But you have Corlys out there, who seems like maybe he's now going to his own direction. Those aren't necessarily his grandkids, and he just lost his son and his daughter.
Yeah. At least he thinks he lost his son. Poor guy.
Right.
And they have dragons, but they also have the most powerful fleet in the world. So they're such an important free agent floating out there in the market. And the deadline's coming up. We got to get him signed, Matt.
He does have grandchildren, though. And those grandchildren from Daemon's line are now on Team Black. So they're at least bound there.
Yes.
And you have Laris Strong out there, who seems like he's kind of...
He's
working for Alicent, but at the same time, I feel like, I don't know, man, he might have his own agenda that I think is going to get explored a lot further.
Yes, for sure. And, you know, he does own Harrenhal now, which he skipped his father and brother's funeral to be near the queen. Because they kind of mentioned, like, you know, Jace says to Rhaenyra, like, we should be at Sir Harwin's funeral. And she's just like, we can't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I posed this to you earlier in the week on our Facebook chat, Jimmy, and I'm working on like a YouTube short TikTok version of it right now as well. But there is a theory out there, and this is sort of a show only theory, but I guess in theory, it could exist in the books.
Okay.
Kristen Cole and Rhaenyra hook up. We see it. She's then given the Westerosi, you know, plan B, otherwise known as Moon Tea. Okay.
Yes.
Some people have been pointing out that Rhaenyra's two sons look different. And that one has more sort of straight hair and the other has more curly hair.
Oh, no.
So there is a theory that is going out right now that Jacaerys Velaryon, who, you know, is supposed to be Laenor Velaryon's son, but might be Harwin Strong's son, could actually be Kristen Cole's son.
Now, does the timeline work? Is Jace 10 here? Because they jumped 10 years, right?
Yeah. Well, the show, it could fit even more because they don't like specifically say he was born an X day.
Okay.
So it could be a show only theory, although it could work in the books. I mean, what do we think? I mean, if they... It's just sort of funny because the scene where they're kind of first talking about their parentage, or at least with Kristen Cole and Harwin Strong, results in them fighting each other. Oh, that's like something a father would do for a son. And then when Rhaenyra, this is in last week's episode, when Jace asks her, is Harwin Strong my father? She says, you're a Targaryen. That's all that matters.
So a little ambiguous there. She gives a non-answer. Yeah. My gut tells me that it's probably Strong's kid.
You're saying they're all three are still.
I think they're all Strong,
and we didn't see the baby.
Well, yeah, we did not see Joffrey. Yeah.
Joffrey, yeah.
Yeah. Which, you know, that name's never going to work out.
Yeah.
It never does. I would say it's probably not Crispy's, but it would make for some pretty good drama if it was.
I just think it's I think it could be very interesting. Who knows? It could be a show thing
Yeah.
Although it could still happen in the books.
Yeah, and we'll never get that answer, most likely, right? For any of the questions that we have for Fire and Blood, most likely will never be answered unless if they tie into the main series, because George is never going to fill in the gaps, I don't think, you know.
No. For all those histories.
Yeah, he'll leave it ambiguous, which is part of the fun.
Well, maybe I know Fire and Blood Part 2 is supposed to
a lot of cover fires.
But it could come back and tie up information.
Yeah, it's gonna be wild. Someone said Daron is in the intro if you pay attention. Interesting.
Oh, was he?
Four bloodlines. Nice. Very cool. I've watched plenty of the intro breakdowns, and I still don't know if I fully get it, nor do I know if I care. I just like the music. I turn my TV up to max volume when that hits. Like, it's on. I mean, every Sunday night, Christmas. It's crazy.
Oh, it's sweet. Yeah, and during the watch party, we were talking about whether or not we still like this intro. You know, do we like this or the map? I think I still prefer the map.
Yeah, the map is iconic.
Jace, right? Valerion, aka Jace Targaryen, Jace Strong, as in the books, is born in 114 AC.
Okay. I don't think that the timeline matches then, right?
I don't think the timeline matches.
No, I don't think so. But I hate to throw a fire extinguisher at a great fun
now in the books or in the show it could still totally work. It's just sort of interesting because we specifically, it would add even more weight to the like moon tea and whether she drinks it or not.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. And then you have the scene with Kristen Cole where he specifically is saying, oh, that's something like a father would show in a son.
Yeah, it would definitely make
it so much better.
It would be wild. That they had that much subtlety working into it, especially with those lines. I would be very impressed. I wonder if book fanatics would be upset, probably. But I mean, I would have no issue with it. I think it'd be fun as long as the timeline lines up. You can't skip years or retcon anything, but I don't think they would. So I think it could be ambiguous enough where they could put off in the show, possibly.
Yeah, because there are even show only theories for Game of Thrones that I thought were very cool and interesting. There's Gendry sort of mentions that he remembers seeing his mother once and she had blonde hair. And I think it was when he's talking to Ned in season one, like talking about what he remembers of his mother, or at some point he's talking about what he remembers of his mother. And she worked in like a tavern, or not like worked in a tavern, but he saw her in a tavern or something. And there's like, and then you go back to when Cersei was talking to Robert and talks about like, well, we had a kid that died. That's not even at all in the books, right?
Yeah. So kind of a show only theory that Gendry might have actually been Robert's only legitimate kid,
Cersei was like, I need to get rid of him because of Jaime.
Yeah. And it's cool because even without being confirmed, like you could just make that your headcanon and it could work, right? Right. So we're going to get a lot of that here, I think.
Right. I think already just because the show is different. And the exciting thing about this is I think it also made Game of Thrones, the final few seasons of Game of Thrones were exciting because nobody knew what was going to happen with the books. Mm-hmm. Not out yet. And so we still view some of those things because George Martin has come out and said some of those things will happen and some of those things will not happen. Well, here,
the future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
It's so interesting because we kind of know the general framework of the show, but we don't know all the fine details. So we don't, and the sources are these opposing views. So when we get things like we got today with him living with Laenor Valerian living, that's like, it's so awesome. And it works. And we had comments in here too, where people were saying it's just a great way to even keep book readers like super excited.
Yeah. And they've done a lot for us book readers, like in this season, that to maybe even a detriment to the casual audience at some points. But the fact that, you know, there was a lemon tree behind Laris when he talked to Alicent, and they were talking about a tree growing where it shouldn't. And it's like a kind of a nod to Lemongate, like just like little things like that, you know, they're really rewarding the book readers as well as still carrying along the casual readers for the ride. So this show is striking a really nice balance, and it was nice to see it rebound after last week where people felt it was a little bit jarring with how fast they move. I do believe, don't be surprised if there's a drop off in viewership this week, because I do believe there'll be some people who drop from the actors switch, but also the big NFL game that happened tonight.
Yeah, there's a huge,
yeah,
it's still going on right now. Although yeah, it's a blowout. So I have it. I've had it right here. 38-17. Kansas City.
That's a blowout. It's a blowout.
I mean, I don't know. I
don't know. I think that
sometimes it may seem like, you know, things are down, but they got Tom Brady. It's kind of like the Greens. Hey, things aren't looking our favor. We got Vagar.
Vagar is the Tom Brady of the Dragons.
is the Tom Brady.
Yeah, so I wouldn't be surprised if we see a little bit of a drop off in viewership this week, but I don't think it's going to be an alarming thing. I mean, the fact that 29 million people are watching this week to week is absolutely flabbergasting. So,
yeah, I was trying to look this up here. Somebody posted it. In Fire and Blood, Rhaenyra marries Laenor after giving birth to Jace. Both happen in 114.
114 AC. Yeah. Interesting.
So yeah, it could work.
We have to dig into it a little more, because the timeline with Crispy is, I don't think, ironed out. And also, we don't know what happened with Kristen Cole and Rhaenyra in the book. It's very like they don't know what happened, like whether he was spurned or what it was. Like there's two conflicting accounts. So it's very open for interpretation of how their relationship ends up in the books. Obviously, the show, we got it. Like we know in the show what we can say is canon. So.
Another thing that I've been seeing some people talk about, and this is a sort of visual thing, because Game of Thrones, the Twitter and HBO as well, has been putting out images, and they showed the same. There's actually, you can look at them almost side by side, and they're very identical. The shot of Daenerys landing on Dragonstone walking up, and the shot of Rhaenyra looking up at Dragonstone, and it's like in the exact same spot, the exact same. There's like this smoky hue.
It's because the volcano is still active on Dragonstone at this time period in history.
Is why. But even in King's Landing and everything, that's why they're choosing that aesthetic.
Well, the only one I saw was a direct comparison of Dragonstone and House of the Dragon and Dragonstone.
Let me see if I can find that photo.
In that comparison, people were wondering why it was so smoky, and some people were complaining on like Reddit, and people pointed out that hey, the volcano in Dragonstone was active at this time. So it actually should have been smoky. Basically, someone was able to pull an exact passage about Dragonstone, and the way it's shot in House of the Dragon is like verbatim what it was supposed to look like with the smoke type, almost like a fog. So I thought that the House of the Dragon rendition of Dragonstone was actually better for that.
Yeah, I don't mind it. I did see some people talking about it on Twitter this week. Like, why is everything so smoky? Because sometimes shows, when they're trying to film like something that's older, sometimes they'll use like a little bit of like a sepia tone or something to try and establish. Like Amazon, for whatever reason, loves to use that like blue filter over things. It's like in The Boys, it's like, especially like season one and two, it's like everywhere. It's like, what is, I don't know, it's a visual aesthetic. I remember in like Wonder Woman, there's a moment where they do that. It's where Chris Pine's talking about like his mission or whatever, and they cut to this, like, you know, it takes place in World War One, But it, so he's talking about like this mission he was on, and they just use this like ultra sepia tone, and I hate it. And it throws me out of it. And but here, I guess I don't really mind the smokiness.
Well, yeah, and I do think the smokiness is only a Dragonstone. I don't think it's happening at King's Landing.
I still feel like we kind of see it, but it could just be a visual thing. I don't know.
Yeah. The only thing I saw was the comparison that was getting passed around on Twitter and Reddit, and then people just actually pulled the passage from the books that describes Dragonstone, and it was like exactly as it was, which was pretty dope.
Okay, we had a super chat, did we not? A little while
yes,
ago.
Yes, we did. It's from our good friend. I think it's Vagar, right? Vagarian.
Okay. When Luke said, "I don't want it," I got triggered.
Dude, when that happened, and then there was a super dark scene, I was like, "Man, there's some people from season 8 that are going to be very upset with this episode." I actually looked at my wife and I said, "People going to be mad about that. They're going to be mad." But what about whenever he said, "If I own Driftmark, that means everyone's dead."
Yeah.
Good follow-up line to that, right? I thought that was a great line to deliver from a child, because sometimes kids see things for what it is, and when they deliver that truth, like that kid's truth, it like hits way different than if an adult were to say it. And I thought that was one of those moments.
Yeah. Yeah, and he says it to Corlys too.
Yeah. And then Corlys, hey, both of his kids are dead. So
both of his kids are dead.
Not a great look for House Valyrian this episode, no. Guys. I'm going to be honest. Not looking good.
No, things are not looking good for House Valyrian. But he did have a good idea to sort of marry the house, marry Jace to Daemon's kids.
Yeah. Yeah. And we'll see if Rhaenys is still going to be down with that.
Yeah.
Not.
So let's talk a little bit about the marriage. I thought that was a really cool scene with them on the island, or wherever they were on the beach, I should say. And they've got the headdresses and they cut the lips to sort of bond their blood.
That's the old Valyrian way of doing things, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the old Valyrian wedding ritual. So that was pretty dope to see. And like, I believed them. Like getting married, like I felt like it made sense. And it's crazy to think that Rhaenyra's scenes with Daemon were with a totally different actress, because I still felt that connection. Like it actually did feel like time had passed and they were still the same people. So I thought it was a good success.
Yeah. Okay. Predictions for next week. Of course, you didn't watch the preview. I've now kind of forgotten exactly even what I saw.
I'll say what I'm excited for. I'm excited to see these new actors, and I want to see some moxie out of Aemon One Eye now, because the kid delivered that line, and now the next time we see him, it's got to be really epic. Not like doing something epic maybe, but like he just needs to have some impact on the screen. So I'm excited to see that. I want to see if Viserys looks any more awful. yeah, I mean, he's scabbing up, he looks terrible. And then I want to see what happens with Corlys and Rhaenys. I wonder if we'll see him next episode. I hope we do, because like we said, their house took an absolute whomping. They got molly whomped this week. So we got to see their plans, where they're scheming, where their loyalties lie. Like you said, they're an X factor and they're a third side to this equation. So I'll be excited to see where they end up putting the Valyrians.
Yeah, I'm excited to see Otto Hightower back as Hand of the King, which, you know, was a moment we saw today. He didn't really get that much screen time in today's episode, but it was very important, the little bit of screen time he had. Just a lot of sort of looks and glances. Really, him and Daemon, almost you can see as like we're like the chief architects of each of the sides staring each other down. So I think we will get a lot more of him next week, because he'll now be older. We'll be, as we get a little bit of a time jump, the lines will have been drawn a bit more. And I think he's going to be a big part of next week, counseling Alicent as she begins to sort of turn into, I guess,
The Green Queen,
yeah.
The Green Queen, man. Yeah, and Otto is someone that we still have a wealth of quality to get from acting-wise. Like, I think he's going to have some major, major, major scenes. Everything's been limited. Impactful so far, but very limited. And I think going into the dance, like, that actor has a chance to really blow us away.
Yeah, as this... every time I see Corlys Valyrian, I think he's... So I feel like we need so much more.
Yeah, Steve.
So every time I see him, I feel like we need so much more.
Yeah, I'm with
you.
So,
okay. All right. Let's dive into the chat here and just take some questions, see what we got going on here. Now that we see Otto is playing his own game, I'm very curious about his decision to tell Viserys about Rhaenyra and Daemon.
Yes. Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see Viserys' reaction to Daemon and Rhaenyra getting married without his permission.
Yeah. Do you think he's just going to flat out, like, we're going to see him renounce Rhaenyra?
We'll have to see. They're going to have to address it on screen. They're going to have to. So we'll see. I mean, Viserys seems like he's kind of fed up a little bit. He's getting a little fed up. He's starting to
stay. And Daemon sort of spurns him again a little bit.
That's right.
Which is just a dumb move. Sometimes I'm like, Daemon, why are you doing? Like, why?
Well, Patrick says, do you expect the story to flesh out Daemon more? I was hoping for more of a Jaime Lannister fleshing out of Daemon. Yeah, it's season one. You know, we got a long time with Daemon left. So I think there's no doubt that he'll be fleshed out more. I expect to have a larger sympathetic moment for him probably later down the road.
Yeah. With the pace we're going, I'm beginning to think this show might be three seasons. And that's it.
Well, it's going to slow down a lot in season two. Because if you look at even like the page percentage of like what they're going to cover totally for the whole show, you know, this prelude that we're getting through in season one is only like 20-25% of the page count, I think. So we have a lot to go, especially when it comes to fleshing out some of these things. So I think season two is going to be much, I don't want to say slower, but much more methodical.
Right. So now that we're, I guess, is it too early to start talking about some of the things we will see in season two?
Yeah, I don't think.
I guess we can. I think we can talk a little bit about it, because I was just sort of reading again and thinking about some of the big players. Because right now we're very focused. It's pretty much just focusing on House Targaryen, House Hightower are pretty much our two main focuses. But in season two of this show, we will begin to explore more of the realm at large. And I almost feel like the season two trailer, I feel like they're going to introduce some characters a little bit earlier than they play a part.
I can see that.
I'm almost 100% sure that the trailer for season two is going to introduce Craig and Stark.
Yeah, I think the Starks will have a much bigger role in season two for sure.
And I think the Starks are going to have a much bigger role in the Dance of the Dragons, at least like what we see from them. Then
I can see that.
Because the Starks pretty much are like ridiculously important at the end of this whole thing. You know, without trying to spoil too much, towards the end of this story, they become like almost become the biggest like player. But I almost feel like we're going to get introduced to that. And I think we're going to see a little bit more of the realm as well. I think we'll probably see the Eyrie in season two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think if you're a show only watcher and you're kind of missing some of the more the scope of Game of Thrones, I do think that if you hold on, that you will start to see some of your other favorite houses that are going to come into play, and you are going to get much more of a Westeros story, less so King's Landing as we go forward, even though the central conflict is always in the capital for the most part. So, you know, there's a lot to look forward to for people who are maybe hoping that it'll kind of like expand out and you really want to see the Starks and whoever else. I think that there's some good stuff coming.
Yeah. In the trailer for in the next week. Yeah. Daemon stole a dragon egg.
Oh, for next episode. The trailer.
Yes.
OK, cool.
Yes. In the trailer for next week. Let me pull up Twitter, too, and see what everyone what the response is over there.
Yeah, so last week I came out of it kind of feeling like, okay, like I know there's going to be some criticisms for this one because like so much happened, and I was trying to get a pulse for how I felt about it. But this is an episode wherever I walked away and started coming up here to do this reaction that I'm solidified that I really love this episode. I would assume that the reception for it is going to be pretty strong. Could see some of the people who think the show's moving too slow, which is a thing, could maybe feel that it's you know, a little too much dialogue, but I thought it was absolutely excellent. Give me that family scene with the dagger anytime over like a battle. I'll take that any day of the week. I love dialogue like that.
Oh, the dialogue was great. The dialogue, I mean, the dialogue is what made Game of Thrones as great as it was. There's a, literally a statistic which shows the amount of speech we got per season, and it just goes down and down.
Oh, I remember you showing me that.
Yeah.
And you took it goes,
like season six, it's kind of like, it starts to tank.
Yeah, the writing's been really strong. I thought it could have possibly been the strongest episode for writing, episode seven. So if episode four was my favorite before, I think this could possibly top it. So I feel pretty good about it. I'm still like, I want to go back and watch the kids fight again. And it, Aemon's eye injury was so gruesome. It made my skin crawl. Like when they show it sewed up, looks like the laces of a football. I'm like, oh my God.
Here's a, here's a shot of next week.
Dude, Aemon, one eye, dude.
Let's also, look at Aegon. He just looks like he's going to be such a,
you know, dude, where do they keep finding these kids?
That I don't know, man.
Ridiculously evil.
Yeah,
like their whole lives.
Looks like maybe Viserys has died here, and Allison's like, well, you know,
yeah, or maybe it's I don't know. We'll have to see. I'm very curious to see what happens. I like that Otto looks a little bit older. Even Allison looks a little bit aged up here. Mm-hmm. You know, Helena looking creepy. That's good. It's good. Like, what a dysfunctional family, dude.
Not wearing enough green.
We need more green.
Very specific with the, you know, the seven pointed stars.
I think in that picture, Aegon was wearing green. It was just a very dark green.
Yeah, he is. It looks it looks green. It's just sort of hard to tell.
Exactly. I don't know. They have like a factory where they pump out these kids that look that just dastardly. But man, they do not run out of them, do they?
No, the casting for this show has just been so good.
Yeah.
Here's another one. Let me get this one up here.
Yeah, pull that up. Let's see it. Oh, yeah. What a shithead.
Yeah.
I love that Aemon, like whenever we first introduced to the kids, like it feels like Aemon is going to be like a very sympathetic case. And in some ways, he still kind of is. But like you think Aegon's going to be the big terror. But even from like this picture, does it not feel like Aegon thinks he's the man, but Aemon's the one with the actual
definitely
power?
Man.
You know,
it's
a really good dynamic between the brothers. I love it.
Yeah, and it's good. It's going to be great to see the on-screen, just back and forth that we get, and the tension that is going to just build and build between Daemon and Aemon. It's going to be so freaking good. Like I don't know this actor. I don't know the guy who's playing Aemon. I don't know anything about him. But just looking at him and just what we've seen in the trailers, I just have a feeling that he and Matt Smith are going to have, you know, just epic chemistry on screen.
Yeah.
That's just going to that you're just going to tell at some point these two are just going to come to absolute, you know, blows.
Yeah. And Matt Smith has done a great job. I think, you know, he's probably interacted with the most people of any of the cast members. Like he's been everywhere. He's been in scenes by himself doing action. Like Matt Smith is probably the MVP for this show for me so far. So
definitely
it'll be cool to see him interact with these kids.
Yeah. And it sort of sucks because Patty Considine is so good.
Oh, he's so good.
And it's just like we're getting less and less of him, which is, you know, accurate and it's great and it's fine and everything, but he's just so good. It's a great problem to have.
Yes.
When people are like, God, I wish we got more of each of these
right here, man.
These actors.
Oh, Mark man. Addy as Mark Robert Addy, Baratheon. So. We all wanted more, you know?
Yeah.
They leave their mark.
Yeah. I mean, Millie Alcock, I mean, stole first six episodes.
Tremendous. The show does feel a little grown up now, doesn't it?
It
I like
does.
It. There's, I like that.
Now, yeah, what do you think now that we're two episodes in with the older Allison and Rhaenyra, obviously?
Honestly, it feels like we've been with them for way longer than 2 weeks. Like, I don't know. There's a more of a heaviness to the show right now. Like a lot of that innocence seems gone. Like Rhaenyra had that, like, you know, she was young, like she still had things to figure out, and like life has just continuously tested her. So I like the fact that it feels a little heavier and a little bit more adult now in the second half. So you know, thanks for all the memories, Millie, but I'm good with what we have now. So you know, but I think all the work that they did can't be praised enough, because they were in a very hard situation where they had to tell like this a lot of story in five episodes, and those actors and actresses delivered. But yeah, now we're settling in with the main cast as of next week.
And the chemistry too between Matt Smith and Emma D'Arcy is so good. Yeah. Like,
and it was good with Millie too.
Right. So. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Crazy. But their chemistry is just, it works so well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So maybe last little topic here, and we talked about it at the beginning of the show. I said, let's come back to it, because I want to talk about it. The sort of Song of Ice and Fire bigger picture ramifications of Laenor Velaryon being alive.
Yeah, it's one of those things where what we're seeing in the show, we probably can't assume that it's book canon, right? Like, it's probably not a good idea for us to think that, because this does connect to the main show.
Now, Jimmy, right? Come on.
I think mixing them up can be tricky. I need to reread the entire section of Fire and Blood, but I feel like it was not really up for discussion that Laenor was alive, but like, also it's a retelling, so who knows? You know what I mean? Like, it could, and then maybe that helps with some sort of Blackfyre rebellion in the future. It makes it more legitimate. Like, that could happen.
The problem,
Shake said, Laenor's the Night King.
The problem, though, is even if Mushroom and
Eustace,
whatever, Septim Eustace, who are two accounts for what happened in the books, mm-hmm. the problem with that is they could both agree on something and it could still not be true.
That's right, because it is just a historical thing, and how would they know, right?
Right. So I sort of think about it as George Martin is more involved with this show than he was the last one. And
you're going tinfoil on me.
Hold on, I'm going. It's not tinfoil. If it comes from George, it's.
But we don't know if it did.
It's Valyrian foil. It's the real deal. Okay. Because I still go back to the episodes of Game of Thrones that George wrote, because he was able to include things and play with things, because he wrote four episodes of Game of Thrones. One of them is the episode where Arya is training with Cyril Ferrell when, not Boros Blunt, Meryn Trant walks in. Mm-hmm. And what do we say to the God of Death? Not today. So that line is not in the book Game of Thrones. It is in the show Game of Thrones, and it was written by George Martin. So what should we take from that? Canon, not canon? I mean, if J.K. Rowling if J.K. Rowling can go on Twitter and say, well, this is canon about Harry Potter, and this is, and like say all of these things that where she's like, this is canon to the stories that takes place outside of the main book series, why can't George Martin do it on the television show where he writes an actual episode of the thing?
I hope he never goes on Twitter and starts changing lore, because that would be the only thing that might get me to revoke my fan card. I think I would just be like out. But to your point, yes, he could be dropping hints for later things in the books for sure. I just have a hard time with mixing up book and show lore for the sole fact that, like, if it's not in the book, it's hard to point to it, right? Like, if you make an argument for a theory in the book and you have to then go to the television show, like that you can, but it's a liability for the theory. Now George writing the episodes definitely goes a long way, because it's not some, you know, it's not Arya killing the Night King stupid, right? So like,
right,
like that's in the show, but like obviously we know that that's not gonna happen.
George didn't write that.
He had nothing to do with that,
so. Yeah, because I'm trying to remember the episodes he wrote. I know the two he wrote were the Battle of the Blackwater, and he wrote it's like episode 8 or something.
Yeah,
or maybe it's like episode 7. It's wherever Arya has to escape and with Cyril Ferrell.
Yeah. Yeah, because so a lot of people feel like he's still alive. And you know, the Jack and Hagar is Cyril Varel, Jack and Hagar. Like, there's that whole thing. Because right. why was Jack and Hagar in King's Landing dungeons? And there's a lot there to play with for sure. And the fact that George wrote the episode does make it very enticing. I do agree with you that we can't for sure know, like, Septon, Eustace, and Mushroom don't know if Laenor actually, you know, died, if that was really him. I think the burning of the body, though, if I'm not mistaken, is not mentioned in Fire and Blood. I think it just said that he was slain by his friendly sword or whoever. So I wonder if that could
be it. Yeah, see, here it says, and see, this was, so there's definitely been some changes because in with the Bronze Bitch, whatever her name is, Rhea Royce, it in Fire and Blood and World of Ice and Fire, they both say she dies. Well, she was out like hunting and she gets injured, and then Daemon goes to see her and she dies while he visits her.
Yeah, because she's up and feeling good for a while.
Right. So that's like a big departure, at least from this tiny little line. It's like that's definitely a changer. Here is and then the other one was Laenor's his sort of paramour that we saw in episode where Kristen Cole beats him to death.
Yeah, Joffrey. Yeah.
That is actually described as in it says that happened at a tournament.
Yes, it's in the tourney leading up to the wedding.
Yep. Right. So that was definitely a change. You know, that was definitely a change as well. So here, let me see, is this from World or is this from Fire and Blood? From Fire and Blood. Laenor was slain by his friend Sir Carl Corey. While attending a fair at Spicetown in 120 AC, the merchants present reported that two men had been quarreling before Blades had come out. Septon Eustace insists that Carl had killed Laenor out of jealousy, believing that Laenor had become enamored of a new, younger male favorite. According to Mushroom, Carl had killed Laenor on behalf of Prince Daemon, although there was no shred of proof for this.
Yes, so that kind of does lead to maybe this... like this path, right?
Right. And see, that's one of the things we have to look at is a lot of times, actually, more often than not, if you go back and look at some of the things that are being said, is a lot of times in Fire and Blood and World of Ice and Fire, Eustace will say, there's no proof of this. Because last week it was, right, and there's no proof of this, right? It's so ridiculous. But last week, when Harwin Strong died, it actually Mushroom had suggested that Daemon had done that too.
That's right.
That wasn't the case. Yeah.
You know, and there's some people who actually like in the fandom that are like, no, like I wish Daemon had done it. And I'm like, why?
Right.
I actually liked what we got last week even more. Cause it makes Laris a little bit more interesting.
Yeah. The preview of episode 8 already has more than 100,000 views.
Yeah. The show's successful. I don't think we have anything to worry about.
Yeah.
As far as numbers go.
Yeah. Yeah. I wish we had, and you and I wish we had screenshotted all the people who were like, this is so cringe, this is not gonna fly, it's not
listen
gonna...
you know, I have many YouTubers in the book sphere that I coincide with that have talked so much smack about When's a Winner Never coming out that the day that it gets announced, it's all on war, folks. I'm gonna be the most petty. Sir Jimmy is gonna be very of house petty that day.
Yeah,
I'm gonna be all on it.
You know, George, actually, I think he's been rather quiet to be.
He was talking about Knight of Cooters on his blog and everyone got mad again.
I don't even know. He talks about that from time to time. I'm not entirely sure exactly.
Knight of Cooters is an adaptation, which is a terrible name, by the way. Knight of Cooters is not great.
He talks now it's football season. So he definitely, you know, talks about that. He did talk a little about House of the Dragon. Let me see. Yeah, then he didn't say anything.
Yeah, he hasn't said anything about wins in a bit. So, you know, maybe after the Jets get eliminated in like 3 weeks, he'll.
Well, I know they beat my Steelers today. Gosh, dang it! Sorry, they beat your Browns. So
they beat our Browns, and I lost the Falcons. So
right there we go. Okay, awesome. All right, guys. Well, with that, I want to thank you guys for listening. Thank you guys for watching. We'll have the audio version of this up tonight. I always get it up every night as soon as we finish right here. I try to get it posted immediately, and there'll be plenty of YouTube videos and everything coming out from that as well. So appreciate all of you guys who have been supporting us for that this whole thing. It's been a ton of fun to do these live stream watch alongs with you. Mm-hmm. We do have a really good Facebook group if you guys want to go over there for more content. A lot of long time listeners have been in there, and it's really active. We're all in there having fun, posting memes and everything. We do have a Patreon as well if you want to go check that out, as well as you can check us out on Apple Premium. Tons of theories and everything that Ezra and I have covered over the years. But now it's gonna be great because Jimmy and I are gonna get it. I'm gonna get a re-dive through some of those theories and stuff, which is gonna be fun. So Jimmy and I will be doing diving into some of that stuff shortly as well. And I've been posting some TikTok like detailed just mini theories as well on the Bend the Knee TikTok and on YouTube as well. So you can certainly stay tuned for all of that. Jimmy, anything before we close?
You know, it's a new era for Bend the Knee. This is our first official episode with me as a co-host, and honestly, I feel good. I'm feeling
good. Yeah, and guys, be sure to check out Jimmy's YouTube channel, The Fantasy Network, because he's doing mid-week breakdowns of the episodes too.
Yeah, it's something I do over there, and I talk a lot about kind of the themes and also the feel from Fire and Blood without spoiling anything. So if you guys want to come check that out, these are always fun because they're just my super raw reactions, and then I get to think a little bit more about how it relates to the source material over there. So and if you're looking for any books to read, I got you covered over there. So
yeah. Absolutely. Awesome. All right, guys. Well, with that, as always, thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. We will be back next week for episode 8, which is a crazy time jump. So we have 3 episodes of House of the Dragon season 1 left. And then there's already a lot of rumors, rumblings going on. We're getting more and more and more out of the Snow camp. So certainly
he's going to be a Game of Thrones con in December.
Exactly. So stay tuned for that. And then we'll actually be diving back into the reread. We'll be diving back into a Storm of Swords, which is perfect. So with that, guys, thank you. We will see you next week. And remember that winter is coming.